Welcome back to Brain Body Movement, the podcast for those interested in everything nutrition, training, and mindset. I'm one of your hosts, Brad, and I'll be joined by my co-host, Brock. Today's episode was a Q&A where we answered four questions that got sent to us through social media. Question number one, how do I get in more protein powder without relying on protein bars, shakes, and bars? Question number two, how many rest days should you take in a week? Question number three, is it okay to always be counting calories? And question number four, what do you think of meal prep services? That was in the back half of the show, and in the front half, we discussed ignoring the thoughts of others, my new checklist, Brock's marathon prep, and a standard couple of random facts. All right, enjoy the show. Ignore what others may be thinking of you, because they aren't.
And even if they are, who gives a fuck anyway?
You won't know, will you?
Yeah, exactly. And even if they are, you only take stock in the value of the people that you take stock in. What they have to say or what they have to think. So I think the quote here that comes out to me, and you'll love this one, Alex Hormozy.
Oh yeah, I'll love it.
Build a stack of undeniable proof and evidence that you are who you say you are. Mm-hmm. So if you are constantly turning up and doing things and being the person that you want to be, then you'll have undeniable proof that you are that person. So if somebody thinks differently from the little bit of time that they've spent with you, or they're limited in interactions with you, and they think differently, where you go, no, I've got this huge body of evidence that I am who I think I am, and I am who I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So is it fuck what they think?
Yeah. It's funny because when you're going out and you think someone is actually like, maybe like briefly looked at you for a bit, and then do you really think that they're going to spend their time thinking of you? They're more worried about like probably what they're wearing than worrying about what you're wearing. And I think it's a lot, I don't know if it's easier, but I think guys find it, I find it personally easier not to give a fuck about what other people think. But I do see with like women and that, they do worry a little bit more about what other people think. Not sure where that comes from. But I think it's more like, it could also be, they think when they're thinking like, oh, about like what others may think of them, is they actually do take stock in those other people of like how they may look. So it could also be that. So now that I'm thinking, I'm like, maybe they do care about like certain people of the way that either they look or what they're doing and stuff. And I guess we're social creatures and just want to like fit in with the crowd. And it is hard going different directions than other people. So like there's been so many like social experiments and stuff. Like if you see a few people just like looking up at a tree, you're going to be looking up at that tree because you're curious about
what is up there,
what's up there. Exactly. And it's the same with if you heard news about something, you would maybe search it up. All these little things, like you just want to like stick with the crowd. And if like, even in elevators and stuff, if there's someone standing, like if there's like a group of people standing some way, most people will stand that same way. And they've even done experiments of people in rooms, and whenever a beeper went off, they would stand up
that.
Or something. And
it was in a doctor's surgery. And then the people that were initially standing up, they had actually left the room, and it was just random people that had come into the doctor's surgery that just kept following the routine.
It's crazy. So we're very, social creatures with like that. And I can get why people may think that other people are thinking of them, and they may be, but like, it's not as often as you think. Like there's been so many times where I've heard people like, what would this person think? And then you hear like, they weren't even thinking of you the whole time. Like most of it's just made up in your head. And I think once you can get rid of that voice of maybe if it's negativity, even of not doing something because of what this person may think as well. And I think that does stop a lot of people. It's definitely stopped me in the past. And I have it time and time again. It's obviously gone a little bit less than it used to be. And some people have it worse than others, and that could just be their upbringing. They've been reinforced for, you know, if they dress a certain way and someone says, are you actually going to wear that right now? Like it may be from the past, and it might not just be, and it's easy for us to say, just like, oh, don't even worry. Like, who cares? Don't even worry about what people think. But it's trained in them so much that that is their default, and it's hard to get out of it. So I just want to have a little bit of empathy for the people out there now that I'm thinking about it, because it's easy for me to say, you know, just fucking don't even worry about it. They're not even thinking about you. But internally, there's been times where I'm like, well, what would this person think? And then I have to catch myself, and it is hard. So I think, yeah, just give yourself some grace and see if you can catch yourself, because it would be a good exercise for growth, really, when it comes to things like this. Because then, like, you know, the whole have you seen like the U curve graph of happiness scale? So like, you're really happy when you're young. It's like a smiley face. Like, you're really
Yeah,
happy
I've
when you
seen that.
are. Yeah, and then when you're down to like in the 40s, you're probably at your worst, and then you gradually get happier as you get older. And I think that's just because at both ends of the spectrum, they don't give a fuck what people think. So I think, yeah, I think that's a good lesson to try and learn, like try and lower that curve as much as possible and try and make it a straight line.
So that's why I said at the start in a not very articulate way of like, only take stock in the people that you value what they have to say and think of you. Like, sure, it's good to take on some opinions, but the other ones that have such a limited amount of time spent with you, water off a duck's back, don't worry about it. And that's where that big body of evidence of you being who you are, who you say you are, comes into play, because it's like, I know I'm not that person. And like, there's a select group of people in my life where I care what they have to say. Family, obviously, yourself, Mitch, few clients that I spend a lot of time with. That's who is really important to me. Everyone else, meh. It doesn't bother me. Now, another thing I wanted to touch on was a little prompt I often give clients, and this is ask your future self. Would future self be happy with this decision? Would future you be happy with eating this meal? Would future you be happy with skipping the gym? That's the person who you got to really care about what they think, because again, that's building that evidence of you are who you say you are. So I think I've talked about the 1 second decisions whilst running all the time. Yeah. Would I be happy with this decision to stop in a minute, an hour, a day, a week? Will I look back and go, ah, I shouldn't have stopped then? Okay, I'll keep going because this is the target that I have set, so I'm going to accomplish that. So yeah, I think take value in the people that you actually care what they have to say and think, and ignore the rest, but keep that group small and make sure you vet those people well first. Like, we've got an extended history. My history with Mitch is going on 25 years now. So 15 years, sorry. 15 years now. So it's extended history of knowing each other. So that's why I take such stock in what he has to say and think. Family, obviously, very important what they have to say and think. So just vet the people that you actually care what they have to say and think first. Everyone else, they don't know you like you do. And I think the most important person that you should care what they think is yourself. That's the most important one out of all of that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was your boy Chris Williamson who was
Shout
talking
out.
about like how you would feel tomorrow. And obviously that's in the future. And I think if you think too far ahead as well, like it's too much. Whereas I do like the whole, well, tomorrow will you wake up and go, was yesterday a good day? Like, I feel good today because I went to bed on time and I ate well, which means I got a really good sleep. So now I'm productive today and I'm moving forward. I think that's a good frame to have of, yeah, what would tomorrow, or you tomorrow, feel like? What you've done yesterday be like? Like, did you give your all? Did you go that extra 10 seconds on the rower, or did you end up going to the gym at all? Did you stop eating when you knew you were full, but you're like, I just could just go for that one little bite? But they are 1 second decisions, and they are decisions that you will look back on tomorrow. And that's why I think reflection is really good, of reflecting on your day. Of I've just started this checklist literally today. So I'll check back next week or whenever. But
that is fresh.
it's very fresh, my man.
How's it going for you?
It's
Successful?
going great. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you right now, one, so there's a few checklists like that. There's three things in like personal and then three things in business that I want to get done. And I'm doing it right now. One of them is 1 hour of content creation. So that's happening today, which is great. You know, starting off on a good foot. And others is like 20 minutes of meditation, because I feel like I just need to quiet my mind a little bit more. There's a lot going on with a lot of things that I want to do, and I'm finding it hard to prioritize. So I thought meditation might really help with that. And another one is like less than an hour of entertainment, meaning no scrolling, no going on those like YouTube for so long and pretending that I'm learning something when I know that I've got work to do. And then hang on, I'll get it up so it's a lot easier for me to remember.
So the YouTube one, I'm assuming that stems off the back of you watching something whilst eating, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've discussed this in the green room off air, and I said that I've deleted Netflix. Now I did that for two reasons. One, majority of the shows on there are 45 minutes plus, and if I'm eating, it's maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then I end up wasting another 25 minutes on the end of that. So that was one reason. Two, it saves a little bit of money. I mean, not much. It's like what, $5 a week, but it does save a little bit of money. But it's more the time that 25 minutes on the end, and I wasn't really watching that much of it anyway. But then I moved to YouTube. But then you can select ones that are 15, 20 minutes long, and you can watch. But then the algorithm pops up with, "Oh, I'd like to watch that as well." I'd find myself watching again. So I've actually stopped watching anything whilst I eat, and I'll go educational podcast, and I make sure it's educational. I do not go anything other than educational whilst I eat, because I'm sort of present and focused in on that moment. So
Yeah.
maybe that's a tool you can implement, mate.
Well,
I've gone to podcasts and away from watching something because I just get wrapped up in it.
yeah. Well, what like I've got here is, I'll just run through them. So yeah, so personal is meditation for 20 minutes, tracking calories, which I pretty well do, but it's like I really got to tighten up my shit right now. So I need, that's one habit that's really going to help me. And then obviously the less than an hour entertainment. And then for business, it's 1 hour of content creation, which is what I'm doing now. 1 hour of like lead prospecting, so messaging people or just following up with people that were ex-clients or whatever to try and get some more clients. And then 1 hour of offer building, which is just building out my offer, what I
What you
offer
have
in,
to give.
yeah, what I have, basically what I have to give. And so that can mean many things, like working on like a mini guide or working like creating content in the my school app that I'm doing, anything like that, right? But I think what's actually going to help me actually do those things is I've got a reward and a punishment. So if I get them all
Okay.
done, so the reward is 45 minutes of Netflix or YouTube or something like that, right? And if I got it all done, I mean, I can go past 45 if I need to. And I was talking to Elmer about it, and she's like, "Yeah, but what about if we want to watch, Netflix together and you didn't get it done?" She's like, "Maybe you could watch 45 minutes of a chick flick with me." So I'm like,
Yes,
no worries.
Elma.
So that's like her reward slash my punishment. And then for me personally, it's going to be no monsters. And so I'm going to ease into it, and then eventually it'll be no caffeine the next day. So that'll be, and I'll get headaches, and then that'll make me go, fuck, I really need to like do this shit. As psychopathic as that sound, I think I work better when I do have some sort of like punishment there. And we do try, I think a lot of people would rather go away from pain than towards pleasure for the most part, which is why, we do what we do. So that's, I'll check back in the next time we do one of these Q and A's, and see how it's going. But I think it's going to be real, because it's now it's in the forefront of my head, and the things that I'm doing are going to move me forward in life and in business. And then I look back at it, and it's all graphed out to see like how good I've done. And then I'll obviously track my metrics with, how many people in my school group or how many people I've got as clients and things like this. And then I can check back and see if it's worked and or if I need to change anything. I'm quite excited.
Yeah, for people listening that think that that's a lot of work, right? Like an hour of content creation, or wow, it's a lot. An hour of developing business and offer, and there was an hour of what else was there in there?
So
So for business,
content
content
creation, and
creation,
then the offer building,
offer building, and then there was a third. There was a third
prospecting,
hour, prospecting.
prospecting.
Yep, and then you've got 20 minutes of meditation, tracking your calories, which takes time, and what was the final thing? Personal
See, they're not in estimate. Oh, less than an hour of entertainment.
yeah, okay, so let's say it's 20-minute meditation, 20 minutes all day to track your calories, and if it's less than an hour,
Oh,
let's say
less
half an
than
hour,
that. Yeah. It's like 10
so
minutes, not even.
yeah, so let's say it's half an hour of entertainment, that's 4 hours of your day. So people are like being like, wow, an hour of content creation is a lot, an hour of working on it, like this isn't a vast amount of time you're committing to this. In fact, I would assume that you'd probably end up doing more than that. Yeah.
That's the
So
plan.
this is the bare minimum. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that with people that you're not just doing 3 hours a day and then calling it quits. This will be the bare minimum, the minimum requirement that you hit each and every day.
Yeah, because I still got clients I've got to, check
Yeah,
in with
exactly.
them, do all
Service.
that stuff.
Yeah. I am going to bring up my marathon training and how it's going because I'm
Please
over
do.
halfway through now. I have my longest run this weekend, 34 kilometers, but I have run into an injury. So I've picked up a hernia, which obviously requires surgery to heal, which is a bit of a pain in the ass. Now, it's a pain in the ass for two reasons. One, I have to have surgery. That's shit. And two, because the purpose of me running this marathon was to get an understanding of what clients are going through in regards to lifting weights whilst prepping for a marathon, because I train a couple of marathon runners. That's now been taken away from me because with a hernia, you can't lift weights. So I will still train and I can still run. So I'll still be doing the marathon, but I just won't get the full experience of like doing trap bar deadlifts, doing lateral step ups with a knee drive, doing reverse Nordic curls, like all these sort of things that I was intending to do to see how I would feel whilst doing it. So that sucks. But things that I can do are things that don't brace the core. So I had a little play around yesterday. I can still do seated calf raises, so hello calf gains.
Beautiful.
I can still do tib bar raises, so I don't get run into shin splints. Leg extensions are somewhat okay because I'm seated and I can pull myself, so I don't have to brace with my core. I can pull with my arms to turn my core off, so I don't need to brace there. Lying leg curls, I can get away with. So that would cover the leg component. And then I'll play around tomorrow and see how I go with like a seated chest press, a chest supported row, just anything where I don't have to brace my core and can still get some sort of muscle contraction. Because leading up to, I've got 4.5 weeks to a race day. So leading up to race day, I don't want to be losing too much strength and muscle mass. So as of this morning, it's the first time I've been under 90 kilos in I can not remember how long. So weight is really falling off quite quickly now. It's about 5 kilos since I started prep. So 5 kilos in 7 weeks. I'll probably go one, maybe two more weeks and probably get down to maybe 88, maybe 87. And then I'll start to introduce more calories leading up to race day to make sure I'm well fueled and I don't hit another injury.
Well, what are your calories at
The
now? If you don't mind me
so
asking.
they're at around 3,200, but on long run day they're at 4,500.
It's a
So,
coupler.
yeah, well, not really, because pre-run I am consuming 500, half a liter of coconut water with an Element sachet. Do you know what Element is? So
Salt,
electrolytes.
salt.
Yeah, essentially salt. Yeah, but nice flavored salt. With some rice cakes and honey. I'm thinking of introducing peanut butter to slow down digestion a little bit, but I don't want to slow it down too much considering I'm going to be running within 45 minutes of that. That may switch to a bagel and maybe some honey. And then every 25 minutes, I'm consuming
Gel.
a gel. And then the next 25 minutes, I'm consuming three snakes because I figured out if I have a gel every 25 minutes, that it can upset my stomach a little bit. But I can have one every, what's that, hour 15, and that's fine, or every 50 minutes, and that's fine. And I have the three snakes in between. What's wild is I can consume 4 liters of water between waking up, weighing myself, finishing, and I consume over 150 grams of carbohydrates. 150 grams of carbohydrates during that run, and I'll come back and I'll still weigh 1 to 1.5 kilos less
Just sweating it.
with 4 liters of water and 150 grams of carbs. So that's
Crazy.
why I'm consuming so much on that long run day. I've done a little bit of looking, and a 200-pound man, which is what I am, although I'm just under 200 pounds now as of this morning, burns roughly 1,000 to 1,200 calories per hour of running. I'm running for 3 hours at the moment, so there's 3,000 calories. So majority of the nutrition and carbohydrates going in is just to support running, that long run. And then I just have a normal day's worth of eating after that. So it's not like I'm like 4,500 sounds like a lot. It's not. And when I try to gain weight and I'm in a muscle building phase, I'll often have to go to 4,500 calories anyway. So
Yeah, you're consuming a lot of calories, just not a lot like of food. Because you get four and a half, you're like, fuck, imagine that in all the meals. But a lot of it is just like gels and
Gels,
water.
snakes, liquid through coconut water. And honey. Now, how I think I got the hernia, and I want to really emphasize this to people. So I'd gone Tuesday night, poor night's sleep. Wednesday night was staying up late, editing videos for work. Got up early Thursday morning to film more videos again for work. Had my tempo run, which is my hardest run on the Thursday afternoon. So 2 nights of insufficient sleep. Hard run on the Thursday. I then overate slightly on the Thursday, and I overate on things that made my stomach bloat. It was like a teriyaki bowl that I don't normally get, but I got it. And I believe it had MSG, which doesn't sit well in my stomach. So I was feeling a bit of like GI distress. I then had a cancellation Friday morning at the gym. So I was like, all right, I'll go in and train fasted. So it was a combination of 3 nights of poor sleep in a row, pushing the limits fatigue wise with my running. So Tuesday run, Wednesday weights, Thursday hard run, and then train faster on the Friday morning. And I believe that's when it happened. I don't know for sure, but I believe that's when it happened. So this is what I say, the importance of sleep. And if you are doing hard training, recovery becomes even more important because your risk of injury goes up. And that is unfortunately what has happened to me. Now it is what it is. I can still run, so I'm still going to do this race. It was a bit disheartening at first, but I haven't come this far to not complete the thing. So I will still do the race, provided my meeting with the surgeon, he's like, yep, you can run, just no lifting. And we crack on.
It's all you
But
can do, isn't it?
I just thought I'd give you an update. Well, someone said to me today that 99% of people would have quit by now.
Quit.
Like I've got another health issue going on with my liver. I don't drink, and there's a health marker that's come back with my liver on two blood tests now that is elevated. That's the doctor is a little bit worried about.
What's a
So,
what do you know what one specifically?
I can find the blood test for you and tell you.
Is it creatinine?
No, it wasn't,
Okay.
because I said that because that can be elevated from hard training, right?
Does. Yeah, hard training or just taking creatine.
Well, it wasn't that. So,
Okay. Because I had that when I was like 18, 19, and then got all the tests, got all the scans, and there was nothing. And then I went to a different doctor. He's like, dude, it's just because you were like lifting weights or taking creatine. I said that to them because they're so similar.
And I'm aware of that. So I've got that, and then I do have the hernia. So depending on what happens with my health there. But yeah, someone said to me 99% of people would have quit by now, considering you've got an issue with your liver and you've got a hernia and you don't particularly enjoy running too much. Like, yeah, but I don't want to be 99% of people.
No.
I mean,
They
no
listen to
way.
Goggins or something.
If If yeah, he's the 1% of the 1% though. I don't want to be him either.
Yeah, man. He's way out there.
Yeah, if you look at majority of civilization, right? I think it's now the majority are categorized as overweight or obese. There's a large percentage of the population that are on some form of prescription medication to deal with some sort of ailment or disease. I don't want to be majority of people. I don't want to be what's regarded as normal. I want to be different because in modern society, different is healthy. Not normal is unhealthy. Normal is not moving your body, not prioritizing your health, not thinking twice about food and just going like, yep, that looks like it'll taste good. I'll have that. It's going, yep, okay, does this serve me and my body well to function and perform well? And when I say function and perform well, I mean both cognitively and physically. So yeah, stuff being the normal person in modern day society. But yeah, that's my little update for you regarding marathon training. 4 weeks to go, mate. Longest run Saturday. I'm still gonna do the damn thing. It's just I will then have to have surgery afterwards.
So is 100% that you have to have the surgery, or you're checking with the surgeon?
I'll find out with the surgeon
Found out,
later
find
this
out.
week. Yeah, so but the lady that did the ultrasound was like, yeah, you've got a hernia. I was like, yeah. I thought a doctor sent me away going, look, I don't think you've got a hernia. And I was like, yes. It's like, I think you've just got an abdomen wall strain. I was like, sweet, that's fine. I'm happy with that. That's way better. That can be repaired just by resting. A hernia is the only way to fix it is surgery. So
Surgery,
yeah, and then you've got a weak abdomen wall. So you're more prone to them in the future. And one thing I pride is my core strength. Like I used to I could probably be cl I probably could have been close to doing it again, was doing an ab wheel from your toes. And you know I love doing like a landmine with rotation. I talk about that regularly. I always program some form of rotation in my program every single week because I pride myself on my movement, my core strength, and the way that my back feels. Like I've never had a back issue or back complaint, whereas lots of people have. So I really pride myself on my core strength and my ability to maintain a functioning core, not necessarily aesthetic, but the ability to brace, squeeze, twist, rotate, bend. So yeah, it kind of sucks, but I'm glad I can still run pain-free, and I'm glad I can still do this marathon because that would have been a dagger to the heart having come this far and then being like, yeah, you can't do it. And I'm 4 weeks out after 8 weeks of prep, and then probably the 8 weeks before that, where I was just building a base, just running to build that body of evidence that I talked about earlier.
Definitely. And I want to congratulate you for continuing on with this journey. I know it must be hard, but you've got the right mindset moving forward of not quitting. And if you are able to share like what is going through your head right now, like what has been going through your head, just to share with the listeners of like how hard something can be. And like you said, 99% of people would probably quit, and they have all rights to quit, but you didn't, and you're continuing on.
So the big one for me is one, I've come this far and invested so much into it. And I know the sunk cost fallacy is real, but I've also, and I said this to you when I came down and visited you. If I commit to something and I'm like, I'm going to do this and I vocalize it, and that's the key word, vocalizing. Like I can have these thoughts of like, I'd like to do that. I'd like to do that. But if I actually go and vocalize it, then I will take action to do that. And this is something that I've vocalized. I want to do. I want the experience to be able to better serve my marathon running clients. And I've got a fair bit of experience out of it. In fact, I've got a lot of experience out of it. So that's one reason is just the vocalizing things. And two is I don't want this to be an excuse. So I said that to you again in the green room off air, that I don't want to try and find excuses. Like, yes, this sucks, and yes, it was devastating to hear that I had that, but I can't do anything about it. Surgery will be in 4, 5, 6 weeks anyway, so I'm going to be close to marathon date anyway. I can still run pain free, and it's not going to affect me any further. So why not continue to go is more the way that I'm looking at it. Like, oh no, I should probably stop. Like, I'm pain free. It's not hurting. Everything I've read is it's not going to make the hernia any worse. The only thing that will is like lifting, straining, not eating a high fiber diet. They're the only things that'll make it worse. So if it's not hurting, it's not going to make it worse. And I've already come this far. Don't turn it into excuse. You use it as like a power thing of like, even under hardship, I was still able to accomplish this thing. That's more my mindset towards it.
Yeah, that's good. It's a story you're gonna tell.
Yeah, that's one of the first things you said to me. It was like, hey, man, this is gonna be add to the story that you're gonna tell. Yeah,
Okay, good
one
story.
day, around a
One day.
campfire, making s'mores, little grandkid on my knee. Hey,
S'mores? Do you make s'mores? Or is that just an American thing you've heard?
little grandkid on my knee. And I'm like, hey, you be careful of that knee. That knee ran a marathon one day. Oh, what? Yeah, did it with a hernia too.
Definitely.
Anyway, enough talking about me. I just wanted to share that with you and share that with the listeners that yes, I've picked up an injury. Yes, my training is going to be very different, but I can still run. I'm pain free. It doesn't make it worse. So I'm still going to do this thing because in my mind, I've got no other option. I want to complete this marathon, and I don't particularly want to do another one. So it's like a if not now, when sort of mentality.
Definitely.
But
And you've
yeah,
got
enough
proof
about
of it.
me. Yeah, exactly. Enough about me. Hit me with a fact. Let's lighten
All
the
right.
mood a bit.
Let's lighten the mood. All right. Now, this is obviously very individualized, but on average, over a lifetime, a person will spend about a year and a half in the bathroom.
Really?
Yep. So,
Now, this
bathroom
is average.
meaning.
This is.
This is average, and this is bathroom. So it does mean like showering, getting ready,
Yeah.
and like toilet and stuff. I'm probably
Yeah.
a year and a half just in the toilet, but
Yeah.
and my missus is probably a year and a half just in front of the mirror. But you know, it evens out.
So this is where I was going on average, right? So the women must be somewhere around 2.5 years, and
Yeah,
the men must be
like
somewhere
half, yeah.
around
Yeah.
the
Like I put some calculations into ChatGPT, and it was like on average, if you spent like half an hour a day over like a, I think it was 80 years or something, it would have been like maybe 600 days. So that's probably where they cut it. But this is just like a random fact. Like you can't specifically, you know,
Yeah,
but
exactly.
it's still a
Made up
lot.
numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a lot. It's like the importance of your mattress, right? You spend so much time sleeping. You might as well have a bloody good mattress to sleep on because your sleep is so pivotal.
Oh, mate, we got a really good mattress.
Yeah. All right, so I've got animal fact for you, as always.
As always.
Elephants can be right or left trunked. So yeah,
Okay.
no, right. So they'll
Okay.
prefer when they like pick up
Oh, like
food or when they go
curling
to drink,
kind
they'll
of thing?
curl to one
Yeah.
side over the other. So they'll be
Gotcha.
right or left trunked.
I can see that. I can see that. That's
Yeah.
cool. That's
And
really cool.
they start to develop that from around 3 months old. So I'm assuming in that first 3 months when they are feeding, they're just going willy-nilly left or right. And then yeah, they say after about 3 months old, they just go, yep, I'm right trunked.
That's cool. Oh, I don't think they'll say that,
Well, they probably do in elephant speak.
maybe, maybe.
Anyway, enough of our shit chat. Good facts, shit chat.
Yeah.
Let's get stuck into some questions.
Let's do it.
Before we get to the Q&A section of this episode, I would love for you to share the podcast with family and friends and leave us a 5-star review. It helps us to expand, get into more people's ears, and ultimately help others, which is, of course, our main mission. As always, thanks for listening. Now, let's get back to the episode. Question number one: how do I get in more protein without relying on protein powders, shakes, and bars?
All right. So if you want to get in more protein without relying on your powders and bars and stuff, it really comes down to the specific protein-rich foods that you're having in each meal. So making sure that you are having a protein source in each meal and having it mainly like leaner cuts. So then the calories don't bump up too much. So if you're like, I'll have a shake, which is, you know, it can be between like 30 or 50 grams, you still need to, find that somewhere in normal natural foods. And the easiest way of doing that is just bumping up the amount of grams that you're having in said food. So, like if you had like 150 gram chicken breast, you would just have a 200 grams. And same with each little meal. And picking the foods that are high calorie will increase that protein intake. Now, I think a lot of people might also think that you need to have a shitload of protein all the time. It's just not the case. Like we say that 1.6 to 2.2. Like if you're struggling to get protein in and you're like, oh, I'm around that 1.6, that's fine. Like you probably don't need your shakes and bars. Usually I just use it for convenience. So then I can continue working real quickly. And protein bars taste good. And for me, so yeah, I would increase the amount of protein source in the your normal meal. So you're not really changing anything else. You're just increasing it. That does come with the extra calories. So it really depends on your goal. So if your goal is to bulk up, that's nice and easy. Whereas if it's to, lose fat, then you would probably need to pull away calories from other sources or change the actual food itself. So say like if you're having chicken thighs, you would change it to a chicken breast. If you're having like 20% mince, you would change it to like 5 or 10% mince. Different types of yogurts, so you want to be more strategic about your food choices rather than having to worry about shakes and bars.
Yeah, so I'm going to give essentially the same advice that you just did. Increase the actual grammage size in each meal, and then make the leaner cut choices so you get a higher protein content for the same amount of grammage. And that would be the 20% beef mince to the 5% beef mince, the thighs to the breasts. I will give a couple of other things. So let's say you're having breakfast, lunch, dinner. Try and add in another meal and get away from the 3 meal routine and go to four. Now, if you're feeling overly full and you can't do that, then I would look to introduce some healthy snacks. Now, I'm not a big snack guy, but if I was to introduce some healthy snacks that weren't a protein powder, shake, or bar, I'd probably go with, say, two boiled eggs or one of those little pots of YoPro or Chobani Greek yogurt, and you're looking at 15 grams of protein there. Now, if you have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and if you have one in between and then after dinner, you're looking at an extra 45 grams of protein in your day, and all you've had is a maximum of six boiled eggs or two pots of Greek yogurt and two boiled eggs. It's not a whole lot of extra food to consume, so you're not taking up too much space in your stomach, but you're getting an extra 45 grams of protein in your day. So that'd probably be the route that I'd go, would be include a whole nother meal. So go from 3 meals to 4 meals. Or introduce those healthy snacks that aren't your protein powder, shakes, or bars. And that could be like two boiled eggs or a little pot of Greek yogurt, which from memory are around that 15 grams of protein mark.
Yeah, or like some beef jerky or something
Yeah,
like that.
another great one. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. And that'll probably have more than 15 grams of protein, a beef jerky.
Or just like slices of turkey. That tastes good.
Yeah. But view it as a snack. So you're not trying to make a whole meal out of that. Now, usually I wouldn't recommend snacks to people. Like I am on the front of go complete meals, but a snack like a pot of Greek yogurt or two boiled eggs, like it's still like a whole food choice. It's not like a snack of like a fiber one bar, which I see people having regularly. Like I'm going to get more fiber in. Yeah, it's the artificial shitty fiber, but you're best off having a piece of fruit for the same amount of calories and getting the actual fiber from fruit than you are a fiber one bar. So that when I say I don't like snacks, it's those highly processed snacks that are commonly seen, like a muesli bar, fiber one bar, a row of rice cakes, or just a packet of pop. Like move away from that and go towards your whole foods, like your two boiled eggs, pot of Greek yogurt, beef jerky, some little bit of deli meat, like you mentioned yourself.
Yeah. And I wonder where this question actually comes from. Like, do they have like a bad association with protein powders, or is it too expensive, or
Watching too much Eddie Abdu, mate.
yeah, how good. But I think it's not like a
<I've>...
either or. I think it's you can introduce those things if you see fit, but maybe they obviously they said rely, which means they're probably relying on it too much, and I could probably see that. So yeah, not either or, just like both.
Yeah. But if they want to go down the strictly whole foods route, then I'd go with the snack idea or adding another meal, like I mentioned. Is there any other way that you can think of? I think that's pretty much
Yeah,
it.
so you're either increasing the meals that you have, increasing the amount of meals you have, or and swapping out the different foods for high quality protein sources. They're probably the top three.
Okay. Question number two. How many rest days should you take in a week?
Well, it depends on your program. This is so individualized. How many rest days should you take in a week? Well, if you are someone that doesn't train too much, like one or two twice a day, then you probably don't need that many rest days. But if you're someone that's, flat out at the gym 6, 7 days a week, you probably need to take a rest day at least, once or twice a week. Like you could probably get the same amount of quality volume in 4 days than you are doing in like 7 or 8 days. And it's a trip, but you'll feel better and you have more time for yourself. I used to be like this. I used to train 6, 7 times a week and absolutely hammer it. And then I've dropped it down to like maybe 4 or 5. And,
Time is
since,
muscle, baby.
yeah, time is muscle. That's exactly what I used to say. I used to run around the gym. Like I was that hardcore, but and doing supersets like different ends of the fucking gym. And anyways, I was that guy. But yeah, I was definitely training too much, sore all the time. And I thought that I would lose muscle if I had taken a rest, but we grow muscle when we rest. So you want to send the signal and let it recover. 48, 72 hours, usually you can hit it again. So, take the time to, relax your muscles and stuff. And if you're getting a bit burnt out, you could get a bit too full on when it comes to training as well. So make sure you're fueling yourself. But yeah, it's there's no hard or fast rule when it comes to rest days, but it's like have your program and reevaluate your program to see if you're taking any rest days for one. Like they are quite important. And I know you like maybe just have a like if you feel like you need to work out or do something, like obviously I used to be like that. So I would just like go for a walk once I started to figure this out of like, okay, it's okay to just, go for a walk and that's me exercising. But like going into the gym all the time, like you are for the most part, unless you're like highly advanced, you're spinning your wheels. Like some of the high bodybuilders aren't working out 7 days a week. Like they need those rest days. And so if you want a amazing physique, like you do look to those guys. And these are natural bodybuilders as well that I'm talking about. You can obviously get away with a lot when you're enhanced,
Enhanced.
but enhanced, yeah, but they need rest days. And so you also have to be careful of your energy availability as well. So you could get revs, which is just you're putting out too much energy for the amount of energy that's coming in. And then that's where, hormone imbalances can come in. You're feeling lethargic and feeling like shit. Like you got to be careful of these signs because they are real things. And there are calculations online to check how much energy that I don't know
You
off the
need.
top of my head, maybe like, no, I'm not even going to say a number because someone will run with that. But yeah, it is important to take a rest day and don't think of it as a rest day. Think of it as a muscle building day because that's when they're actually going to recover.
Yeah, so a question like this, how many rest days should you take in a week? I would think usually comes from someone that's not wanting to take rest days at all.
Yeah,
Now,
probably.
if you are that person, have a rest. But that doesn't mean you don't have to do anything. So, how many rest days should you take in a week? From daily movement, none. Do something to move your body every day. However, take some rest from the strenuous activity of lifting weights or including some intense cardio. Take some rest from that and do something that's more rejuvenative. And that way, you're not losing the habit of training or even going to the gym because you can go into the gym every day, but just do something rejuvenated. So, something like a mobility session where you're working on ranges of motion and trying to get control in ranges of motion, or just going for a walk, or maybe you go and you do 10 minutes of mobility and you jump in the sauna for 20 minutes. You don't have to rest your body in terms of just sit on the couch and not move all day. You should do some form of daily movement every single day, but you do need rest from the strenuous activity because, as you said, that's where majority of the muscle growth happens. Like you've broken down the muscle training in the gym, and then it needs to rest and rebuild to grow new tissue outside of the gym. So when we say the bed is where the magic happens, by magic we mean grow muscle, not anything else. So get your mind out of the gutter. That's where the muscle is built, which is the magic.
That is the magic. That's it.
And then for someone that, let's say this has come from someone that's taking lots of rest days and then looking for any excuse to take a rest day, get to the fucking gym.
Get to the fucking gym. Exactly.
Like,
Get to the gym.
stop listening to that first part of us speaking and being like, ah, oh, yeah, see, they said rest is important. Ah, oh, it won't matter if I miss another day. No, if you're training under 3 days a week, get to the gym, put in the work, regardless of how you feel.
Or at least move. At least
That
move,
feeling,
yeah.
yeah, that feeling shall pass, but you will remain.
That's it.
Question number three, is it okay to always be counting calories?
Yeah, it's fine. All right, next question. Counting calories. So the ultimate goal is not to count calories. And I know we go on about counting calories and how amazing it is because, you know, we can eat what we want and still have the bodies that we dream so or desire. But that's flexible dieting for you. But it's counting calories is just one of the tools, and we enjoy that tool a lot. But it's not like I don't always count my calories. It's usually when I need to really dial things in, aka today. Moving forward, I will be counting my calories. It's in my little sheet that I need to tick every day, or else, you know, chick flick time with the missus. So it's like, if you want to count your calories, that's totally fine. If you don't want to count your calories, it's totally fine. This question obviously comes from someone hearing other people always counting their calories and always having a bit. But the goal is to intuitively eat. Well, let me rephrase that. A good goal to have is to intuitively go through day by day, being at a good, healthy body weight and not having to worry about calories all the time and go, okay, this is a good choice. You've set your house up and environment around you for good choices, and you don't feel bad if you have dessert, and you don't feel bad if, you know, you go out with friends and maybe have a drink or two, whatever, but it's okay. Instead of like, I've got to like full on count my calories all these times, like it's a great tool and I love it. I'm all for counting calories, but I think the older you get, if you don't have like a specific goal, just to live, like eating to live and eating to enjoy food for what it is and friends and family and enjoying the little treats without guilt. That's the place that you want to go to, in my opinion. Like counting calories can definitely help you get there, but it does have, at the end of the day, it is still lingering in the back of your mind. If you're still in a place where you're like, oh, I should really count these calories, like, because I don't really know what's in food, like, there's still something that you got to work with there because it's like, well, you're still relying on that so much, and you want to try and transition away from counting calories because you can get orthorexic, which I've certainly been, and I think you've mentioned it before, where everything's like got to be healthy, everything's got to be dialed in, and counting calories is one part of that. So, is it okay to always be counting calories? It can be, but personally, I think shifting away from calories and just eating to live is probably the best place to be.
Yeah, so counting calories or always counting calories, I feel is okay if it's a tool you use to maintain a healthy body weight. And if not counting calories doesn't allow you to maintain a healthy body composition and healthy body weight, then I'm happy with you to continue to count calories. However, the goal should always be intuitive eating and going, okay, this body serves me well. Counting calories is simply a tool you use to, one, educate yourself on the nutritional value of the food you're eating, and two, to know exactly that you are moving the needle in the right direction when you have a specific goal. So when it comes to fat loss, I will always dip into counting calories and tracking macros to achieve a specific goal. When it comes to building muscle, if I want to make sure that I'm eating enough, I will always go into counting calories, tracking macros to make sure that I'm eating enough, but not too much, because I would lean on the side of overeating to a point where I'm gaining unnecessary fat and not actually just putting on lean muscle mass and body tissue. So, is it okay to always be counting calories? I believe yes, provided that it's a uses a tool for you to maintain a healthy body weight and body composition. However, we want to be able to not have to rely on that as a tool to maintain that healthy weight and body composition. So the ultimate goal is intuitive eating, but some people really struggle to get there. I know it's seamless in Lane Norton talks about this. It's seamless in his life. It requires zero effort or energy from him. He simply just weighs his food, tracks it, goes about his life, and he's like, I think I will forever count calories and track. Now, that could be orthorexia. And Lane is a type A, no innings numbers kind of guy.
Is
So
yeah.
that could be, yeah, that could be that. But yeah, I do feel it is okay, provided it doesn't cause you any like cognitive stress of like eating out. Okay, what are the calories in this? If it's something that you can go, yep, I can still have a meal out and enjoy a meal out with people, or I can still go away for 4 weeks on holiday and not have to worry about counting calories. If you can do that, and then when you are in your normal, mundane Tuesday life, I like to call it, living your standard Tuesday, and you like to count calories just so you maintain your healthy body composition, sure, by all means, go for it. No one's to say that you shouldn't do that. So, yeah. That's how I feel. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's it does keep you accountable, and it's a great tool, especially when you're first starting out, just being aware of what you're eating, because some people just have no idea what foods they're eating on a day-to-day basis or over a whole week, of like how many calories are actually in certain things, what choices they're making. Because, 3 days ago, you don't know what you had. Like, for the most part, it's really hard to remember, and just keeping track of it helps with that. And it helps you, like, when you start to track, you just start to eat better. So it does help in that way. I think the longer you track, the better you get at intuitive eating. And like Lane, I didn't know he still tracks his calories all the time. But yeah, it could be orthorexia, could be that it's easy for him. And that's just one path, where some people might find that intuitive eating is a lot easier than tracking calories, because you're still tracking and in your mind of like, oh, that's probably better than that. I'm going to choose this over that. You're like, you've got all those skills in the back of your mind, and you're like, well, yeah, I'm too intuitively eating. Like, I'm not using an app, but I'm doing it. And that is a good way. But yeah, when it comes to fat loss and stuff like that, I think tracking calories is like, does put you at ease a lot more. But I do know people that have done preps without tracking calories and macros and stuff, and still looked all right. But they're just like seasoned bodybuilders, natural. But they're definitely a canary in a coal mine kind of deal. Like, that's hard. Like, I would find that hard right now. And I've been tracking macros for, since what, when I was in London. So what, 8 years now or so?
Yeah, some of
Yeah. Yeah. And, I think my missus is better at tracking than I am when it comes to like guessing stuff. But the thing is, I'm more consistent with it. So what is it better? Is she better at it than me, or what? Like, so yeah, it really comes down to what you actually want to do. Like, do you find yourself every day like opening up the app and just quickly scanning it while you're about to eat it? Or are you going to do it at night before the night, like the night before? Are you going to do it after you eat? Or are you just going to go like one day on, one day off, or three in a row? Or you're just not going to do it at all? But I think it's a good tool to learn to know about foods and what's in foods, what's our natural protein source, what has fat in it, what has carbs, what's got fiber in it, how many calories certain things are when you go out to eat. Like, you're not going to know 100%, but it's like, wow, if I just didn't have those chips, I probably would still be in a deficit right now, or whatever it is. Like, but yeah, I think the main goal would be to intuitively eat, but you still could intuitively and track at the same time, technically. Like, yeah, I'm intuitively eating, and then you just like track it all at the end of the day, and you go, you could like test yourself, like, all right, today I'm going to intuitively eat, and then see how I go. And you could like wait afterwards or something. I don't know. Just a thought.
I think you'll agree with this. If counting calories gives you less stress, worry, anxiety about the foods you are eating, then I've got no issue with you always doing it. Whereas if intuitively eating gives you more stress, worry, and anxiety about it, then it's probably not the right approach for you. So you need to find the method that one gives you the least amount of stress and worry and fear around the food you're eating, and two, requires the least amount of restraint, because we live in a modern world that has a plethora of food available to us, and it's highly processed, and it's often scientifically engineered to have us eating more and taste fantastic in our mouth holes. So it's a struggle to restrain from that. So whatever requires the least amount of cognitive restraint from you to say no to things, go with that method. But I still think at some point in time, people should track calories and macros to learn the nutritional value of the foods that they regulate. But would you agree with that? Whatever provides you with the less stress, worry, anxiety, fear around food, and you don't have to count calories all the time. Like I said, you can go, okay, I know I'm going out for dinner this weekend, I'm going to give myself an 800 to 1,000 calorie buffer. Go ahead, go away and eat, come back and continue to count calories. If that gives you less fear, worry, anxiety around food and that social event, then I think that's the best approach for you. Whereas if you're to intuitively eat all day and be like, oh, I'm at a social event, and now you're worried and panicking and stressed about the foods that you're eating, then that's probably not the right approach for you. It's whatever mentally gives you the least amount of head noise and requires the least amount of cognitive restraint.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's a great tip, because I basically intuitively eat when I'm around maintenance, and then, or maybe even a slight surplus. But when I'm in a fat loss phase, that's where
Always.
I'm just like, no, I need to track, just so I am, because I like flexible eating, and I feel like if I didn't track and then I had, like, Caramella Koala or Raffaello, I would feel like,
Climbs through.
or yeah, could I? Could I fit this in? Even though I probably could, it's just easier just having the numbers there, and that takes way, like, a lot of stress off me, like so much stress. And yeah, I guess you got to pick what's right for you. Some people are like, I can't track. It's too much for me. Like, it takes me half an hour to do it or whatever. And there's going to be some time at the start, but once you learn, it's a lot easier, and you don't always have to track. So yeah, pick what works best for you with the least amount of pain, I guess.
Yeah. And final question, question number four. What do you think of meal prep services?
I love meal prep services for the fact that it saves me time, and it probably saves me money as well in the meantime. We've gone through a few in my time, and we've settled on one that's out in the Barossa wine country. They're called Vintage Chefco. Shout out. Give us
Looking for a
a smidge off, mate. And they're great. They're like home cooked meals and stuff. And I don't know what they work out to be, maybe $12 or something a meal. Now, when I say they save me money and time, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if I was to work in that time, the amount of time to, like, prep all the meals that they make, not like a quick bone broth kind of 5 minute meal, that's easy. Because I still do that. That's the thing. Like, we still make those quick, easy meals as well. But we use the preps for, like, either lunch or dinner, depending on what we're doing. And they taste delicious. It's a variety of foods as well. When we used to do it was hard, because some of them, they didn't have, like, nutritional values on most of them, only some of them, and then that's why I stopped them for a bit, but then it brought them back. But you've got, like, what other ones? You got, like, Muscle Chef, you've got U Foods, all these kind of ones as well that are really good too. The only problem that I see with it is sometimes the portions aren't as much as maybe they say they are. And they could be a little bit out with the calories. So
20%.
we've got that 20% buffer. So you do have to be careful. So if you're, say, in a fat loss phase and you are using these meal prep services, I've heard from other coaches as well, they're like, once we stopped the meal prep services and we just went to them cooking the food, that's when fat loss started again, is because that buffer of, like, that 20% is just knocking out the calorie deficit.
Calorie deficit, yep.
So you're just like, okay. You got to just, like, find out where you're at with this kind of stuff. So that's why we just, like, have one meal a day, usually, maybe less actually. I think it's only one every couple of days. I'd use the meal preps, and that's just pure convenience. It's just, like, right there. You don't have to think about it, especially coming home late from work, especially with the missus. She's just like, I do not want to cook at night. Like, we used to do HelloFresh, And that was like a whole ordeal. Like, it's good together cooking something, but it's like nearly 2 hours worth. And, if I value my time a certain amount per hour, like, there it is, just gone straight away. And it is good to cook together. So don't get me wrong. But it's like cooking all the time. That's why I like the meal prep, then the services, and then maybe we just like have one meal together cooking, which is like good vibes with the missus and Nala, of course.
I'm with you. In terms of convenience and then getting someone to make a healthy choice when they normally wouldn't, I'm all for them. My concern that I was going to bring up was that 20 percent calorie buffer that they're allowed to play around with. And if they're a meal prep service and they're attempting to be a high protein meal prep service, let's say they've got it as 50 grams of protein in that meal, then it could actually be as low as 40 grams. And let's say they've got it as 500 calories, it could actually be as high as 600 calories. So that's a fair swing in one, the protein content, and two, the amount of calories in that meal. So if you're having all your meals through a meal prep service, then there is that buffer. But for saving time, for the convenience factor of not having to cook, and for being able to make a healthy choice when in a pinch and when you normally go through a drive-through or something, they are a fantastic option just to have stored away in the kiddie bank, just in the freezer, bang, get it out, whack it up. Bob's your dad.
Bob is me dad. Yeah. Yeah, they're great. I love them. But yeah, be careful for those extra hidden calories that might be in there.
Yeah, that's same with anything in a package or a wrapper, right? If you can, that's why we push the whole foods thing, because a whole food is a whole food. There's no 20% calorie buffer in those. If it's
No.
200 grams of sweet potato, it's 200 grams of sweet potato.
Yep,
Whereas if it's
exactly.
200 grams of a protein bar, it could be 220 calories. Sorry, 200. Yeah. So there is that buffer that they're allowed to play with. And you best believe that if they're promoting themselves as a low calorie, high protein food,
They're
that
gonna
they're going to
push
be
it.
manipulating that buffer as much as possible.
Yeah, and it might not be intentionally. It just might be that chicken breast was just a little bit more than the other one, or they scooped a little bit more in whatever. However, they bloody do it. But yeah, that buffer is something of concern when you are going lower and lower into your deficit, and you got to yeah. That's why, yeah, Whole Foods are a lot easier, and you're only dealing with the tracking error of yourself, because technically you are tracking right if with a meal prep service, but then you're relying on them that they're correct exactly. Like, do you really think all those meal prep services are exactly the same amount of calories with the same amount of macros? Like, no, it's definitely not.
Okay, so that's a wrap for today's episodes. If you want your questions answered in the future, make sure you are following us at brain.body.movement, at Brad Dapper, and at Brock underscore Dalgleish. And you can ask us a question whenever we put up a sticker box or shoot us a DM. Now, we just want to say thank you so much for listening to us. If you got any value from this episode, we would really appreciate it if you shared to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag us so we can say thanks. We would also appreciate it if you shared it with family and friends and left us a 5-star review. But before we go, we can leave you with a few things. Make your damn bed, get your steps in, and be kind to one another.
Cheers.